Welcome to episode 214 of the Grip Strip Podcast, the Jumpman edition of the Grip Strip Podcast. We're recording this on April Fool's Day, but this definitely isn't an April Fool's joke. Neither was Denny Hamlin's start at the end of the race. My name is Philip Matthew. I'm your host, and I'm with my co-host, the iRacing Indy 500 champion, computer genius, a gentleman and a scholar. His name is Josh Afine. What's going on, man?
I'm doing great, Phil. Of course, happy April Fool's Day. I don't have any April Fool's jokes on here, but I mean, it would be some April Fool's joke if NASCAR redacted the results of yesterday's race, but they're not going to do that. But yeah, the jump man or the jump man's business partner himself, Denny Hamlin, goes out and wins steals the win from Martin Truex Jr. in the cup race yesterday on Easter Sunday.
Yeah, and happy belated Easter to those who do celebrate. We both had our respective Easter celebrations, and we're talking about that offline. We'll definitely talk about the Easter Sunday night race that started in the wet at Richmond International Raceway. So that was interesting. And then it became a race that was dominated by two drivers, Kyle Larson and Martin Truex Jr., this is one of his 18 home tracks. There was a couple of big moments during the race, the race itself, one that it ended up involving Kyle Larson and one that involved Kyle Busch that basically dictated the whole entire event. We'll get into all that and the points as we head to Martinsville. Xfinity was a lot of talk about Bubba Pollard, the late model standout, and his Xfinity debut for Junior Motorsports. Ended up starting tailback, as Rusty Wallace likes to say, because he was the first car out on the track, similar to kind of what Dale Jr. had to deal with when he's had to qualify for his one race or whatever a year because the 88 is a part-time car. But we talked about it, I think, Josh, we mentioned it last week where it was going to be a Gibbs benefit. Well, it was a Gibbs benefit, and Chandler Smith has now won two races this year and is definitely inserting himself into the conversation for the first time as a championship contender. Last year, he won this race for Colleg and then promptly disappeared for the rest of the season. This year, though, he's a factor every single week while his full-time teammate runs 10th to 15th, and then the 19 car does random stuff. So we'll talk about Chandler Smith. We'll talk about the points. We'll also get into the reason that I'm probably going to waste about $50, which is both sides of the Joey Gase Dawson Cram accident. Dawson Cram has already went out and made merch. Sometimes you're the, I have to bring it up here. Former guest on the show, Dawson Cram. He already has merch on his website. Sometimes you're the bumper, sometimes you're the windshield. And then a facsimile person that looks really stupid that is supposed to be Joey Gase. And then Joey Gase today, ended up making his own t-shirt. So I'm probably going to waste $50 on two t-shirts just to help out two of the teams, two of the drivers that have to basically claw their way to every race. So, and they ended up taking each other out. So that was interesting. In terms of the roundup, very short and sweet. Rally Kenya was Cali Rovanpera in his part-time role this year, but he ends up winning Formula E in Tokyo. Interesting end of the race. Liberty Media has now bought World Motorcycle Racing, so there might be a chance for Moto America to maybe get connected with Liberty Media, and who knows, maybe have some of these World Superbike riders come over here and race at Daytona for the first time in decades. and other things. Maybe you can have Americans, actually more than one American, in World Superbikes and one in World in MotoGP, in the MotoGP classes. We'll talk about preview the NHRA, Arizona Nationals. Also something that I got liked by Matt Hagen, the driver for Tony Stewart Racing, of course, the defending Funny Car champion. We'll mention Matt Hagen and his better half here in a little while. And we'll preview the Japanese Grand Prix and who will finish behind Fishlip, since we know he's going to win. He fell out of one race and then promptly won about 800 more. So he fell out of this last race, so I'm sure he's just going to start another winning streak. We can see maybe a Ferrari or McLaren or someone else might have an answer. Who else could kind of stand out there? Didn't make any picks on the grid talk, so I guess these are going to be my picks here. NASCAR Cup Xfinity Trucks preview and picks for Martinsville. We'll do all that. Proving once again that I do a terrible job of picking on our show, but then when I'm picking in the pool that I'm in, I do a better job, which we'll get into more. Josh will let us know all things going on in iRacing and gaming. He was calling for wet weather oval racing as part on his socials after the debut of it for the Cup Series. So we'll see if that comes off sooner rather than later. We'll call it a day. So yeah, wet weather racing, that's say that three times fast, at Richmond International Raceway, because they had the bright idea of racing on Sunday night, because they didn't want to affect Easter services. They raced in the last week of February for God knows how many years. They've raced all over the map, but now they decided they're going to put Richmond on Sunday night. That ended up being Easter Sunday. And it's not a thing like all the zealots that were on socials crying about Easter and this, that, and the other. The notion is they could have run the race on Saturday night, and they could have gotten both races in, and you could have just been done with it, and they could have gotten an extra day off. Instead, you make the team show up on a Saturday for a Saturday morning to do practice and qualifying, and then they're done. And you're waiting more basically a whole day before they have to come back again to prep for the race itself, which is idiotic. They're lucky that they've been practicing or sciencing out this whole wet weather deal. How they executed the wet weather situation probably leaves a lot to be desired. But in the end, that's how they got the race started. They didn't have to dry the whole entire racetrack. It didn't take them hours and hours to do that. But in the grand scheme of things, the race itself, like I mentioned, was a tale of two drivers that ended up getting into it with each other at the end of the race. It was Kyle Larson who won stage one, Martin Truex who won stage two, scored a bunch of points yesterday, the most points. More than the drivers that finished ahead of them. But in the end, neither of them end up with the victory. Kyle Larson getting affected by another Kyle's caution in Kyle Busch for a yellow that probably didn't need to be called, since they, had a chance to bring out a yellow with like two laps to go or three laps to go, and they didn't call that one, and it was a similar instance, which ended up affecting strategy for a lot of teams, including Kyle Larson, who had just pitted, and kind of handed the race over to Martin Truex Jr., who was on an alternative strategy. And then, of course, the spin-out, which Kyle Larson was involved in, getting loose in front of Darrell Walsh Jr. Darrell Walsh Jr. ends up going through Kyle Larson and cleaning him out, sending him into the grass, bringing out the yellow before Martin Truex Jr. was able to get the white flag. And that led to a whole series of events. Slow pit stop, Denny Hamlin having a really fast pit stop, Denny Hamlin going and being an hour early on the final restart, Martin Truex getting butthurt about that. then getting butthurt about the fact that he got ran hard on the last restart by his teammate, even though it really wasn't that bad. Then he started to rage because he was around Larson. He's like, I got beat because I got jumped on a restart. It's like, no, you lost the race on pit road. And the fact that, you know, Kyle Larson got loose. And so I guess he probably wasn't happy with Kyle Larson. And he started slamming into him. He went and doored him down the back straightaway in a rage and was trying to destroy his own race car like a Joe Gibbs Racing driver would. But in the end, he was dominant for basically the last 250 laps of the race and didn't end up with the win. It happens. It's happened to everybody. It happened to it's happened to Martin Truex a bunch, but if you're a great race car driver like he is, it's happened to all of them. Tony has lost. I remember when Tony went and held a small water bottle in 2012 when he got screwed by a debris yellow, and I think that one Clint Bowyer won or something, or somebody like that, I think. So, who knows, maybe, I don't know. I know that he won in the 15 car there. They showed it yesterday, and it's rare that he's won anywhere. So the fact that Clint Bowyer wins somewhere, you have to give him a badge of honor because he's a moron. But either way, let's get into the results here of the Toyota Owners 400. Dennis Hamlin, the hometown hero, even though the majority of the crowd wasn't too keen on the result, gets the victory, leading 17 laps. Joey Logano gets his best finish of 2024 with a second. And he was catching him and got to within about, I think, 6 tenths, maybe half a second. And then I think the air, like the issues with the aero, started to come into play. Maybe the front tires were going away because of that. And he wasn't able to break through that kind of bubble that has been an issue also with this car, but then has been the issue with NASCAR since the lobster cars were around in Gen 4 era. So Logano second, Kyle Larson from pole finished third after winning stage one, led 144 laps. Martin Truex Jr. finishes fourth after winning stage two, leading for 228 laps. William Clyde Elliott the second finished fifth. Christopher Bell from 29th finished sixth, but could have been more. He got caught speeding on one of the last pit stops, which hung himself out to dry. William Byron, 7th. Brad Keselowski, 8th. Christopher Buescher, 9th. And Tyler Reddick, 10th. Josh Berry gets an 11th. Ran way better than that. Came from 30th to finish, get stage points in both stages. Noah Gagson was 12th. Darrell Walsh Jr. Was running in the top five and would have finished 5th in the race if it weren't for that yellow that he ended up being a part of. And then his team promptly went and shit the bed on pit road yet again. And what would have been a top five finish ends up being 13th. That Jones boy finished 14th, Chastain 15th. I'm glad I didn't go with Chastain in my one pick'em pool. There was 22 cars on the lead lap, including Kyle Busch, who I mentioned brought out that one yellow lap 171, which affected the strategy. And then after that, there was only one more yellow for the next, from what lap 177 till, you know, the scheduled end distance, there was one yellow, and it was for the stage break. And the fact of the matter is, they made that caution an 8-lap caution, which is insane to me. But that's a whole other story. We've had that discussion on here about stage breaks and how long it takes them to convert, flip the thing around. It doesn't take 8 laps to get done with a stage. I'm sorry, and then flip it over. I don't care that the commercial, if you're going to tell me 3 minutes of commercials and slow the freaking guys down. You know, like, the other one was 14 laps. So you spent 22 laps under yellow for two stage breaks. I mean, what kind of, and then there was a wreck. I mean, granted, there was a spin there between Nacho Libre and Josh Berry, but I mean, that's crazy. And then they spent 16 laps under yellow as part of a competition caution plus a 2 minute plus red flag. I don't know. That's NASCAR for you. But in the end, we called Josh aptly named this episode Jumpman. So credit to you, sir. And you get to talk about the Jumpman himself because Dennis Hamlin stole that one multiple ways from Martin Truex Jr. But really, in the end, it's just racing at the end of the day. And what was basically a two-car benefit, I ended up seeing someone that wasn't either of them getting the victory.
Yeah, Denny Hamlin, they're stealing the win. Real advantage by getting on pit road, off of pit road first, over his teammate there. So, you know, really his crew got him the victory there, of course. But, you know, of course, the real controversy is, did he go early in the restart zone? And seems like he went a little bit early in the restart zone, which obviously, you know, it's kind of well known in the Cup Series, late race restarts. You're trying to win the race. You might start to go a little early and go, you know, get there and everything. And also you're trying to prevent the guy in second or the guy on the outside from, you know, jumping you and overtaking going into turn one. So yeah, there's a lot of factors in that, but yeah, it looked like he went a little early there, and you know, Denny's all but admitted it there. Looks like, you know, NASCAR, even though all that happened, they called it good, but you know, just hard to go back and say, hey, we don't want the, we, or, you know, we're going to take the win away or penalize you because you jumped the start. Obviously now it's already, gotten, past that and everything, but you know, definitely, you know, a lot of people have, you know, pointed out, you know, what Denny Hamlin did. You know, Josh Wise on Twitter, you know, it's especially known, you know, in the Cup Series, go early, fire early. So you know, I mean, Denny did what he had to do to win, but you know, it's all on NASCAR to be able to penalize, you know, Denny when they had to. And they could have done it right there after the restart, which, you know, effectively probably could have handed the win to Martin Truex or Joey Logano, but, you know, they chose not to do it. So, you know, now they've got to either just, you know, go on without this and not, you know, address the situation any further, or come out, you know, on Tuesday or something and say, hey, we made a mistake there. We should have, you know, not, or we should have penalized Denny after that start. So, you know, that's on NASCAR to be able to make those calls, and they didn't. And you know, to me, you know, I think a lot of this is like, well, the restart, you know, is always determined by the leader. The leader goes, and I've always held the view that, you know, you go when the flagman signals green, or you know, when the tower, when they signal green, and that's when you go. But of course, you know, leader reserves the right to restart the race as well. So yeah, it's kind of an issue there when he, you know, clearly looks like he jumped the start there, but you know, he got the win, of course. And then not only did he jump the start, but you know, looks like maybe he ran Martin Truex kind of to the outside in turn one there. And of course, Truex was upset about that after the race. And of course, Truex took it out on Kyle Larson as well, and ran him into the back of Denny Hamlin on the cooldown lap. So frustrated for Truex, of course, but you know, I feel like he's a guy that just gets easily frustrated like that, and you know, any situation like this or when he's behind lap cars or anything, gets real easily frustrated. But you know, that's kind of how Martin Truex is, I guess. But you know, that happened, of course. And the other guy that was really dominant in this race, especially in the wet weather, golfing buddy for Denny, Kyle Larson, very dominant as well, but faded back late in the race. Got tighter and tighter, and then also got was the benefit or the cause of the last caution there, getting loose and getting spun out by Darrell Wallace Jr. there. So yeah, the controversial ending there to the race. But yeah, Denny now the second driver to repeat this season as a, you know, repeat race winner. So you know, he moves up in the point standings as well. He's up to third place in points. So yeah, already a good start for the year for Denny Hamlin. And so now, you know, we'll see how the rest of the year goes for him, as he's all in this year, allegedly, according to what he said on his podcast, and trying to manifest his first career Cup Series title.
We'll see if he can actually go and do that. Getting a couple wins early in the season, though, doesn't hurt. Gives you a lot of time to do some R&D. That's the same thing with William Byron. Essentially, he's going to do R&D and probably end up winning a couple more races in the process of doing that. I mean, one thing I'll say, though, I mean, the short track package itself at Richmond, we've had it on a high bank short track. Now we've had it at Richmond, and the racing, I mean, to be fair, Richmond has not been the action track for a long time. This package, I don't think really did much of anything, outside of allowing them to get the race started. That's probably about as far as we can go with it, because two guys basically owned the whole entire race. There's people that are on socials talking about, well, now we have two more races that are like this, meaning the other Richmond race later in the year, and then Iowa, which is basically going to be the same kind of deal. The one thing about Iowa I would say is that because it's so rough, that there might be a little bit more of a difference. The tire's going to be hard as fuck, so they're not going to have to go and pit for tires. But the track surface is really, really brutal, and that is going to lead to a little different kind of action compared to Richmond, which is very smooth, or relatively smooth, and the sweeping corners, the corners are also all right. There's not really a whole much of deviation. So that's something. And I mean, yeah, Truex being butthurt, it's Martin Truex. I mean, go and put on a pair of Depends, just get it over it. It's like, you've won how many races since 2016, bro? Like, you've won a championship. I mean, I get you drive for Toyota, but you don't have to prove that you drive for Toyota that much. Going like full Keebler Gibbs on that. But, you know, whatever. I figure he'll win at one of his 17 other home tracks at some point this year, because he's been fast, and all the Gibbs cars have been fast. Especially with this package, they're fast every single week they use it. So he might just go and win at Martinsville on Sunday. So it's gonna be a processional race anyway. So if he can qualify well, may put it away right then and there. Josh mentioned the points. I'll go over here, and right now Denny Hamlin and William Byron, they both have two wins, so they're the theoretical points leaders. But Martin Truex Jr., even with the issues yesterday, is the points leader by 14 points over Kyle Larson. Then Denny Hamlin is in third place, and I guess Keebler, I'll look at it based on the regular points. So yeah, Keebler Gibbs is fourth, Ryan Blaney fifth. He had basically a nondescript night. The Penske cars, I mean, Gumby Cindric had a good qualifying run and promptly dropped anchor. Blaney was nowhere. Christopher Bell sixth, Byron is seventh overall in points. Elliott, Chastain, Reddick round out the top 10. Bowman, Buescher, Busch, Wallace, Suarez, and Brad Keselowski round out the 16. John Hunter Nemechek is 7 points behind Brad Keselowski and Daniel Suarez. And Chase Briscoe, 13 points behind both of those guys. And Joey Logano's 14 points behind, but I think we can make a... It wouldn't be a stretch to say Joey Logano is probably going to win a race at some point between now and the end of the regular season. Even though it has been a struggle for the Fords in general, right now you look at the 16, if they decided for whatever reason, is to end after seven races of the regular season, we can go and start the playoffs. Only three Fords are represented, while I think, what is it, six Toyotas are represented. Every Toyota is in the playoffs. That's from Gibbs, basically. You have Eric Jones in 22nd in points, so he's kind of lurking and has had pace here and there. So I mean, that's the points right now. Martinsville would be, I guess, would have a lot of similarities in terms of what we saw this past weekend. But I mean, Hendrick and Gibbs have been the dominant teams for God knows how long. So, and Martinsville's a track where, what is it, 40 years ago or whatever the fuck, Hendrick won their first race. I wonder if they're running those schemes this week, if they're going to run the 40th anniversary schemes this week at Martinsville.
But, yeah, I think Hendrick is running the 40th this weekend.
Because all their cars are going to be, I think they're going to be red or whatever.
Yeah, red.
Yeah, so, and then because it would be cooler if they just ran all of them with the white, with the red side trim, like what they ran when Jeff Bodine won that race, but whatever. I think they, even when they debuted, when he debuted his team or whatever, they used blue with the white, and they had chrome wheels. Like, that would have been also an interesting one, but that's beside the point, whatever. The Xfinity race was definitely not interesting. The booth was not compelling either, even though Joey and Brad have know each other so well, you'd think they'd have way better chemistry. But the race was basically, it is the Toyota Care 250. It was a Toyota benefit. I will take credit, though. I did pick Parker Retzlaff as my wild card, and he did qualify on pole. So I give myself an attaboy for that. I pick wild cards better than I pick actual picks. But I did end up picking Eric Almirola, who led the most laps and won both stages. But in the end, he wasn't as fast as Xfinity 10G or Chandler Smith, who gets his second win of the season. Taylor Gray and Corey Heim, two Truck Series regulars, two drivers for Tricon, finished third and fourth. Heim was up there the whole day. Taylor Gray had to come up from 27th to finish third. Jesse Love rounding out the top five. Bubba Pollard finished sixth after starting tailback, as I mentioned, 37th. Parker Kligerman, seventh. Austin Hill, Sammy Smith, and Cole Custer round out the top 10. Justin Allgaier was 11th. And yeah, we got some of these. But I think, I'm trying to remember who they ended up having that last yellow around, what was it, lap 183. Was that the yellow where they all pitted, or was that after the stage? I'm trying to remember offhand, but it was basically half the field decided to pit and half the field decided to stay out, in terms of, and I think Justin Allgaier was the leader of that group that decided to stay out. AJ Allmendinger, Riley Herbst, Shane Van Gisbergen. Yeah, those guys all were part of that group that stayed out. And in the end, because of the pace of Chandler Smith, he lapped all the way up to 10th. So there was only 9 cars on the lead lap. But yeah, that basically it was determined after that 178. Yeah, basically that caution that involved, which we'll get into in a little bit more later with Dawson Cram and Joey Gase, that determined basically what we saw in the end, which was, I mean, yeah, the Toyotas were going to win anyways, but it wasn't as straightforward, at least initially. If a caution had come out somewhere in that last, 80 laps or whatever of the race, then there might have been, if there's somewhere around 40 to go, a caution to come out. Probably Justin Allgaier is the winner of this race, but that's why the crew chiefs make the big bucks. That's why they have to make those difficult calls. And Chandler Smith and forgetting who his crew chief is, but whatever. They end up going and making the right call and getting a second win on the season. When you look at the multiple, like the leaders, double-digit lap leaders, there's five of them. So, and three of them are in Toyotas. So, I mean, take from that as you will. But Chandler Smith, do we have to start taking him seriously as a championship contender, Josh, now that he has won his second race of the year and third time he's won at Richmond in a third different vehicle since he won in a truck? He won for Colleague last year in Xfinity and now has won for Gibbs in Xfinity at Richmond.
Yeah, I think we're at a point now in the season where, you know, we've gone through different types of tracks now. We've had mile and a half, so we've had the super speedways, we had short tracks, we had road courses, and Chandler Smith has finished in the top 10 in all of those races so far to start the year. And obviously he's the points leader, one at Phoenix and one here at Richmond. So yeah, I mean, I think he's looking like a early championship favorite here so far. And especially, you know, the only, his worst finish of the year was at Coda, finished eighth, and otherwise is finished in the top five. So yeah, I'd say, yeah, he's definitely a guy that we need to look out for here later in the year. You know, looking at, especially at flat tracks, you know, Phoenix is a flat track. Richmond's a, you know, relatively flat track. And then, you know, later in the year, we're going, well, next week we're going to, but also at the end of the year before Phoenix, we're going to go to Martinsville flat track there. So definitely going to be a threat here on the, you know, on the short tracks, on the flat ovals that we have here in the Xfinity series. So definitely think that Chandler is going to be a guy that we have to look out for here later in the year. And you know, it would not be surprised at all to see him win the title or just be in the final four for that matter. So yeah, he's definitely a guy that we need to look out for. Pretty good start here to start off the year, and of course you know, dominated the race here this past Saturday at Richmond. So yeah, think he's going to be a guy that we need to look out for here this season. But yeah, his teammate also, Eric Almirola, led a ton of laps. So yeah, it was really just a whole benefit of, I mean, Toyota's finishing the top four. So just a whole Toyota deal the whole Saturday there. But you know, one other guy that I'll mention, Bubba Pollard, of course, getting start for Junior Motorsports this weekend, first career start in NASCAR. And has been a short track guy for, you know, his whole career, but would be a guy that we see more often in the Xfinity series. I don't think so, but you know, I think this is a good, you know, recognition of what he can do on a short track and, you know, what he's able to do as a race car driver. And you would have think that maybe he could have been up there top five in speed, but had, you know, some issues qualifying and then, you know, getting everything settled, but long green flag run, he's able to cut, make his way up through the field there. But you know, is this going to be like Josh Berry situation? Probably not. I mean, I think he's a little bit too old now, you know, to be able to make it up there, you know, into NASCAR. But you know, certainly recognition for a guy that's been dominant over in super late models here in the Southeast over the, you know, last, you know, many, or at least, you know, last four or five years, or probably even longer than that, going back to many years. But yeah, he's definitely a guy that, you know, if he had an opportunity, he could be somebody to look out for in the Xfinity series.
Yeah, it's definitely a respect and honor thing from Dale Jr. because of his love of late model racing and supers and the whole bit, to give Bubba Pollard his just due. And he proved the point, like you said there, in that last long green flag run, moving up through the field to get that top five finish. I guess we really will be left wondering if he was able, he had speed in practice in the short practice session, he was one of the fastest cars there, and then promptly had to go out first in qualifying, if he had actually had a a decent draw, or if he was in a car that runs regularly, does he qualify up front? Does he make these Toyota drivers sweat? You know, so on and so forth. I guess we'll be left wondering. But in his case, and for his family and everybody, seemed to be a success, and getting a top five finish on debut is really, really good. And, you know, he gets to go and keep on doing what he's been doing for many years, which is go and win big time late model races. And he can also say, well, I did it against the Xfinity guys and I was able to hold my own. So credit to him on that. And yeah, I mean, the last thing we'll talk about before the points was the incident that basically determined the split of who pitted and who didn't. Was a wreck that saw a former guest of the show, Dawson Cram, proceed to basically drive Joey Gase halfway down the straightaway and then into the turns one and two fence. And then Joey Gase, which is funny to me, it reminds me of when I went to Bristol the one time, which was a nightmare and is still probably affecting me for all the crap that we had to go through just to go to that race. And I ended up getting his autograph, and I think it was his Cup debut or something. He was debuting for BK Racing or some crap, or it was one of his first starts in the Cup Series or something like that, Joey Gase. And this is going back, I think, was it 2016, 17, whatever. I remember that race because also, other than the nightmare of having to go and all the stuff that went on with it, but Kyle Busch ended up passing Eric Jones late in that race to get the victory. Eric Jones was a rookie that year, driving a second car for Furniture Row with 5-Hour Energy on it, and had the fastest car, but just didn't have the experience to hold off Kyle Busch there. So yeah, so Joey Gase, somebody who I've met and gotten an autograph and buried somewhere in all my memorabilia, and getting sent by Dawson Cram. He goes and then rips off the deck lid off of his own car and then proceeds to try to Tony Stewart it or Dale Jarrett the deck lid into the window. I guess that seemed to be the overarching theme or the way that it looked. In the end, it did hit the windshield because he just was a little bit off with the timing. But in the end, Joey Gase got his point across. And then in turn, both of them are now going to get merchandise opportunities out of it. I don't know how much it costs, how much it's going to cost for Joey Gase to repair that race car. I don't know. He's going to have to sell a lot of t-shirts to do that. But Dawson Cram saw it as a marketing opportunity, and now Joey Gase is as well. So I guess all's well that ends well. But the Dawson Cram definitely arc a break into a guy who had given him an opportunity in the past, and Joey Gase. And then Joey Gase set him on fire, threw a deck lid at him. That's good stuff right there. That's some actual, that was the most entertaining thing that happened in two days of racing at Richmond, was that, because otherwise it was a boring, god-awful event, which is depressing to me, because I remember Richmond back in the day actually being good. The racing was actually good. You were able to pass. There was fall off. I think it all went away once they stopped resealing the track every year, along with all these other aero things and stuff. But yeah, I mean, Joey Gase and Dawson Cram being the story of the race basically tells you how bad that race was. I mean, being the story of the weekend tells you how bad the racing was in general for 2 days at Richmond, but so be it, right? Let's get into the points. Josh mentioned Chandler Smith is the points leader by 10 over Inbred Hill. Cole Custer's third in points, Jesse Love fourth, Riley Herbst fifth. Basically, Custer's in his own world, and then Jesse Love starts everybody else. right now, you got Jesse Love, Herbst, Allmendinger, Allgaier. He's had plenty of bad luck to start this season. Kligerman, Sammy Smith, Bruckshot Jones, who blew up and then hit the wall. Sheldon Creed, who's been generally incognito or just not there in general compared to his teammates. And then Anthony Alfredo, by 1 point, is in the 12th and final points spot. The battle itself between from Sheldon Creed to Parker Retzlaff, who got his first career pole, is only 10 points. You count Bruckshot Jones into that mix, and it's 13 points between those six drivers. So there's a lot. That actually is an interesting battle, to say the least. That's something, I mean, yeah, Parker Kligerman and above, I figure all those drivers, either they win or they're going to get in. They'll make it in somehow, some way. So then once you get past that, I figure SVG is going to win at some point. Sam Mayer is going to win at some point. So that's going to start condensing that point situation. And you never know. I think Sammy Smith is plenty capable of winning, but they still haven't figured things out with that team. And Bruckshot Jones is liable to, but he didn't do anything last year to prove that he could. And he wrecked on Saturday with a blown engine, which they were saying how weird it was that they had multiple engine failures. But then also Brad brought up the fact that they run older or more tired engines at Richmond compared to racing them elsewhere, where they would have be turning more RPM. But I mean, that's really, you look at the points here of the guys that are regulars that are running every week here. I mean, the only person that's like, yeah, I mean, you got Josh Williams, who's had a brutal start to the year. He's in a battle basically for dead last amongst the drivers that have run every week with Haley Deegan. Jeb Burton is absolutely nowhere too. That's a nightmare scenario for him. He's basically waiting for Talladega and praying, or Atlanta or something, and hoping and praying to make the playoffs, because otherwise he's fucked. Yeah, I mean, Mayer, at least there's like there's a window, at least for Sam Mayer, knowing what he did last year and the versatility that he has and that team. But once you get past that, I mean, it's going to kind of take away what is an interesting battle between a few of the small teams here, with Alfredo, with Auer, Ryan Sieg's team, Jordan Anderson Racing as well. So, and then you add that to the three of the four big teams in the Xfinity, or maybe I guess five, it would be fair, three of the five big teams in Xfinity and Junior Motorsports, Gibbs and Kaulig. So we'll see what happens with that. Martinsville's a challenge all the time, so we'll see how that works. Let's move forward to the GSP roundup. Rally Kenya, as I mentioned, this past weekend, they brought back the snorkels on the cars there, so, which is the first time in many years that they had those for the air and to get the air distribution, and also for the drive through all the puddles and crap. So the round three of the World Rally Championship was the rally, the Safari Rally. The results of the Safari Rally, as I mentioned, Cali Rovanpera gets the victory, third different winner in three races. He beats his Toyota teammate Takamoto Katsuda by 1 minute 37.8. The Ford of Adrian Formeau finishes third. So credit to him on that. Efren Evans gives Toyota three of the top four spots. Thierry Neuville finished fifth. Then Gus Greensmith finished sixth overall and first in Rally 2. Oliver Solberg seventh and second in Rally 2. Atanek finished eighth. Jordan Sirdis with a Ford finished ninth. And then I'm not even going to bother to forget that. Escapeca Lappi was 12th. Munster, Gregoire Munster, was 15th. And the other rally won cars. So I don't know what flag that's. I guess they're Kenyan. Okay. Birthplace was Kenya. All right. But then there are Indian guys. So they have Indian names. Then the points after three rounds of the World Rally Championship, Thierry Neuville has a 6-point lead on Efren Evans, and Formeau moves up to third in points, so giving all three manufacturers representation there. Atanek is in fourth. Kalle Rovanperä, with his victory, moves himself up to fifth, ahead of his teammate Takamoto Katsuda, and then Sebastian Ogier, who only ran Monte Carlo so far this year, is in seventh. Lappi, Solberg, Sami Pajari rounding out the top 10. So yeah, Oliver Solberg, right now Rally 2 driver, ninth in the Rally World Rally Championship points. So it tells you how good he's been so far this year. Formula E in Tokyo, the Tokyo E-Prix, that was there was a lot of energy save late in the race, which allowed based on Oliver Rowland, the was leading the race late but ended up having to save, and in the process allowed Maximilian Gunther by to get Maserati their first win of this season. So that was they both started on the front row, so there really wasn't a whole lot of movement relative to those two guys. Jake Dennis, the defending world champion, finished third, giving three different power units representation there: Maserati, Nissan, and then Porsche. Then the two factory Porsche drivers, DaCosta and Wehrlein, Dennis's teammate Norman Nato, so all four of the Porsche-powered cars were together. Apt Cupra with Nico Müller finished 7th, Nick Cassidy 8th after starting 19th, Robin Freins 9th, and Sergio Sette Camara finishes 10th after starting 4th for ERT. So that's you got Eduardo Martara got disqualified for using too much power. He was up front. De Vries fell out of the race. Degrassi fell out of the race with a wreck. In terms of the points standings heading to Italy for a double header, Pascal Wehrlein leads by 2 points over Nick Cassidy. Oliver Rowland is 9 points behind in third. Jake Dennis, 10 points behind in fourth. And Max Gunther, with his victory in Tokyo, gets himself within 15 points of the lead after five rounds. Mitch Evans, Jon-Erik Vern, Sam Bird, who won the one in Brazil, and Robin Freins and Sebastian Buemi. Sebastian Buemi and Antonio Felix da Costa are actually tied for 10th there. They'll be racing again in a couple of weeks' time in Misano Circuit. So they'll race a doubleheader there. Then they'll race Monaco. So Monaco, Berlin, and then you have basically a race a month after that, with Shanghai, Portland, and London to end out the season. The Liberty Media mentioned they bought out Dorna Sport, which owns essentially World Motorcycle Racing as we know it. They own the MotoGP World Championship, and they also own World Superbike. So World Motorcycle Racing, as we know it, is now owned by the same group that owns Formula One, for good, bad, or indifferent. we can say that there are some things that Liberty has brought to the table that have been good for Formula One, but you could probably list just as many things that have not been good about it. One thing that at least they'll get with MotoGP is they'll actually have some level of competition, albeit Ducati is dominating right now. But, you know, you can ride for another manufacturer and have a semblance of a chance, especially if you're on a European bike, not so much if you're on a Japanese bike, which is ironic since Honda is dominating in Formula One these days with Red Bull. Yeah, World Superbikes as well. I mean, you consider what their calendar is and what they brought to the table. There's more of a convergence there. And maybe if they're looking forward or trying to look at a way to acquire something else, Moto America is there and they have a lot of good racing. You have the Supersport class there that also races the Daytona 200. You have the Superbike category, which is very competitive and has led to guys coming here and then going back and racing in World Superbikes. I think there might be an opportunity there. You'll also look at Trackhouse owning a team in MotoGP. Hopefully it means that there's more American representation on the world stage. Once upon a time, it used to be Americans that dominated, not just in Grand Prix motorcycle racing, but in the World Superbike Championship. I can remember going back 2 decades, really, and how many Americans were on the grid. Not just in MotoGP, but also in World Superbikes. And now, only have one American in Moto2 and one American in World Superbike. So hopefully that's what we lead to. And it's not like a token hire like Williams did with Logan Sargeant and are basically cratering his entire career in the process. But we'll see what happens with that as things go on, as they learn about their new acquisition. Okay, last thing will be NHRA, the Arizona Nationals. They've been on and off on. They've been talking about Firebird Raceway closing, and then they've been brought back basically from the dead. So at least in the world that we've been in with a lot of these racetracks closing, at least Firebird hasn't. The point standings heading into the race at Phoenix in Top Fuel, they still haven't run the final eliminations for Top Fuel Funny Car and Pro Stock from the Winter Nationals. So this could all change points-wise. Sean Langdon, the points leader over Billy Torrens. Justin Ashley by 18. Justin Ashley's minus 31. Steve Torrens minus 35. And Tony Schumacher minus 47 rounds out the top five. Antron Brown, Brittany Force, defending champion Doug Coletta, Josh Hart, and Clay Milliken rounding out the top 10. Tony Stewart is tied for 11th with Sean Reed. Mike Salinas got out of his car for his daughter Jasmine. So Jasmine right now, after racing at the Winter Nationals, she's 15th in points. So we'll see how that all goes. In Funny Car, J.R. Todd has a 29-point lead on Matt Hagan, 47 on Ron Capps, 48 on Austin Proc, 49 on John Force. So four former champions in the top five: Bob Tasca, Chad Green, Paul Lee, Terry Haddock, and Cruz Pentragon rounding out your top 10. And scroll through Daniel Wilkerson. He's had a slow start to the year. Buddy Hall, who's driving for Big Jim Dunn. Alexis DeJoria, another one that struggled, along with Blake Alexander. So those are, and Dave Richards. I don't know if he's running the whole time, but Blake Alexander definitely is running the full schedule. So something to look at. Pro Stock, Enders up by 49 on Dallas Glenn, 76 on Anderson, Christian Quadra, and Brother David are round out the top five. Brandon Foster, Matt Hartford, Jed Coughlin Jr., Aaron Stanfield, and Mason McGahee round out the top 10. Troy Coughlin Jr. outside the top 10, surprisingly, along with Camry Caruso, Fernando Quadra Jr. There you got Derek Kramer outside of there, Chris McGahee. Yeah, so that's just amongst some of the other drivers that have been, that are outside at the moment. And then Pro Stock Motorcycle, Gage Herrera for over Matt Smith, Ellie Tonglet, Angie Smith, and then you have Steve Johnson, John Hall, Richard Gadsden, Mark Ingwersen, Chase Van Zandt, and Hector Arana Jr. tied with Gianna Evaristo and Kelly Klontz, 1 point behind them. Ayler, Gladstone, Bud Yoder, and Chris Bostic. So we'll see what happens here in the Arizona Nationals and competitors. So this weekend will just be Fuel, Top Fuel Dragster, Funny Car, and Pro Stock, along with Pro Mod. Stan Shelton with a Ford, a couple of Fords, and then Chip King with the Dodge Charger. And yeah, otherwise the vast majority of the cars in the Pro Mod category are all Chevys, mostly Chevy Camaros. Then in Pro Stock, so 20 for 16, so it's not a bad turnout. For the Pro Stock category, they're running every race this year compared to recent years, so something to look at. Jed Coughlin, Sienna Wild Gust, that is a name. Fernando Quadra Jr. running a Ford with a actual Ford engine. So that's basically the usual suspects. Nobody. 18 cars for 16 spots, so two cars going home. For Funny Car, you got Terry Haddock, who's just kind of a field filler. Austin Proc there racing the car for Robert Height. Jeff Deal, Jim Campbell. So those are, and then you got Bobby Bodie, who you can never count out, capable behind the wheel, and they can surprise, so long as they make the show. And then in Top Fuel, there's Smoke right there. So there's 16 for 16 based on my rough math, so nobody going home, so there might be a little bit more conservative running to make sure they get through the weekend itself. Jasmine Salinas, as I mentioned, will be racing the Scrappers Top Fuel Dragster for the foreseeable future. You got Krista Baldwin out there. You got some of these other people. You got Tony, of course, trying to get past the first round for the first time in 2020. So that's something that we'll have to go and look at and see how that all works out. What is a PBRC? So we'll see how that all goes in at Firebird. What is now Firebird Motorsports Park? The one thing I did, I'd be remiss if I don't mention my newfound fandom for Matt Hagen. And it's largely because of his significant other, who is an absolute piece of ass. She went and posted herself, Chloe Hudson, otherwise on social media known as Arcweld Angel. Arcweld Angel, since I'm going to go on there, Oh, that's cool. Going and cutting trees down. So there you go. Shows her ability with plenty of power tools. But the picture that she has in her Easter, she says Easter church service at 10:30, weld repair at 3:00. And let's just say that I would probably, there would be a question about who would last the full 4 seconds of that run. And I think Matt Hagen, I have to give him credit. if he's able to last the full 4 seconds, because Christ almighty, that is a beautiful woman. That is a lot of woman right there. Oh man, her and her friend Constance Nunez, then now that's some good following. If you want to go and look at beautiful women that know their way around a car, and especially when you're disturbed like I am, it does the job. But yeah, credit to Matt Hagen that he's able to satisfy her and still somehow or another get behind the wheel of a funny car and drive it to the level that he does. I would probably pull the nom de Asamoah and just kind of, you know, take it easy behind the wheel because I want to save my energy for what I'm doing in bed. But you know, that's the credit to Matt Hagen. I mean, I guess we have to give a undercard credit to Tony Stewart that he's able to hold out with Leah, but you know, we'll see what that is. He's already got his whole strat together. If they are end up expecting, he talked about it on Speed Freaks, it might have been one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. And Tony's said plenty of funny things in the 25 years that I've been a fan of his, but the whole discussion about him and if they were expecting child and how he would handle it might be one of the funniest pieces of audio he's ever had in his illustrious career. All right, so roundup done. That's cool to get that done that quick. Something else that'll be done quick is the Formula One preview, the Japanese Grand Prix, Suzuka, all one of the classic racetracks, plenty of historic moments have taken place there. And then, you know, so you got Japanese drivers, you got Tsunoda racing, you got Iwasa practicing in FP1 for Daniel Ricciardo. The points heading into the Japanese Grand Prix, Fish Lips leads by 4 over Charles Leclerc, 5 over Sergio Perez, and then 11 over the smooth operator coming off of winning the Australian Grand Prix, and Carlos Sainz there, and then Piastri and Norris separated by 1 point. George Russell, Woody, 7th in points for Mercedes. Then you have the two Aston Martins and 1 Sir Lewis Hamilton rounding out the top 10, 1 point behind Lance Stroll. Only 2 points ahead of Ollie Bierman. So, and he's coming off of having a power unit failure at Australia too. So it's going to be an issue later in the year for probably losing grid spots because he lost one of his power units. Or I don't know which components were affected, but probably affected components. That's going to be a problem later in the year. But let's see here. In terms of, I picked first last week, so Josh, you get first dibs. 1 Japanese Grand Prix. What do you say for who's gonna? I mean, I think we know who's gonna win, but who else will be on the podium with the guy that's probably going to win?
Yeah, I would say Max Verstappen is going to win. 2nd, Carlos Sainz. 3rd, Lando Norris.
Sainz and Norris round podium. And then for me, yeah, I'll also do that. Fish Lips to win. I will go with Eclair instead of the smooth operator, and then Piastri grounding out podium there. So I'm just going opposite with the two teammates there. I don't think Mercedes is going to have a great weekend. They'll be battling with Aston Martin to see if they can get back into the top 5. I think Lewis just wants to have a good week, good race. That would be a novel concept, get through to Q3. That would be great because they got a couple of flyaway races here. They got Japan and then they have China So if you have to first time they'll be back there in many years, so we'll see how Mercedes responds. We'll also see if Logan Sargeant will actually have a car to race this weekend. Last year he had decent pace at Suzuka and then binned it in qualifying. So we'll see if he's allowed or given a chance to even race this weekend at the Japanese Grand Prix. Okay, so now we'll move over to the truck series. They had a couple weeks off, so they're back racing. The Long John Silver's 200 will be on Friday night at Martinsville Speedway. 33 for, yeah, so nobody's going home. William Sawalich driving the one for Tricon. Mason Massey for Young's. He's a full-time driver. Sammy Smith will be in the 7 for Spire. 22 for Ryum Brothers doesn't have anybody listed. You have everybody else. It's kind of the regulars. You have Bailey Curry's a full-timer, along with Matt Mills. And then you have, yeah, Caden Honeycutt in the 45. Cameron Waters, yeah, that's the one interesting name for sure. The V8 Supercars driver for Tickford Racing, the Monster Energy Ford driver, is making his truck series debut at Martinsville. So people thought it was crazy that Shane Van Gisbergen would make his debut on an oval at IRP. Well, Cam Waters is out of his goddamn mind because he's doing it at Martinsville. If he actually makes it past the second stage, I would give him credit because he's liable to get run over by insert name here. There's plenty of people who are liable to do that. Of course, we look at earlier and so far early in the season, Rajah Caruth a winner. Ty Majeski's been fast everywhere, which has been his usual thing, but Kenny Close, et cetera, et cetera. Last year, Corey Heim won in the wet. So we'll see how that goes. I'll go here since I picked last there. So I'll go first here. And I'm going to pick Ty Majeski to win. I'll pick Ty Majeski to win here in Martinsville. It's a track that is right in his wheelhouse as a late model driver, late model standout. And then as a wild card, I will go with, I mean, in theory, I could probably, I'm going to go and check the points just out of curiosity. So I don't go and, I'm going to go with Lane Riggs again. I think we're going to keep on. It's going to be easy to pick Lane Riggs because you figure that Front Row Motorsports is going to get things together because they're that good of a team and that they have additional support from Penske, especially on the Cup side. But you would think that some of that stuff would trickle down on the Truck Series side. Lane Riggs, a great late model driver. This is a track that he has experience at, The bigger racetracks, I get him struggling. I get him struggling on road courses. His dad was terrible on road courses. On bigger tracks, his dad wasn't bad, actually. So, something that will come along. But the short track racing is where he can make his bones. He needs to make up points. This is an opportunity for him to do so. So, Truck Series at Martinsville. Phil goes with Majeski to win and Riggs wild card. How about you, Josh?
I'll start off with my wild card. I'm gonna say Sammy Smith in the 7 is my wild card there. I mean, the 7's been pretty good all year, so that's who I'm gonna go with. And actually, I'm gonna go say the Spire. I'm gonna say that Rajah Caruth comes out here and wins at Martinsville. Might be a bit of a stretch there, but he's been having a good season so far, so I'm gonna go with him.
Well, it is Hendrick's 40th anniversary, so I wonder if he's also going to be running a special scheme, being his that Fat Felon's his benefactor too. But Rajah Caruth has plenty of experience on the short tracks as he's went up the ranks. Spire Motorsports has been fast in general. So at one point, they had won every race. Just at least the first three races they had won. So I was debating Nick Sanchez personally also, but I went with Ty Majeski. But I mean, the Sammy Smith pick was basically low-hanging fruit. I was going to go there, but then I'm like, yeah, I might as well go with somebody who's a regular, needs to make a move, and Riggs is that guy. But yeah, I mean, Raja Carruth, solid. Sammy Smith has experience, so it's not like he can't do the job. Lane Riggs. So there you go. We'll go to the Xfinity Series race. Xfinity Series at Martinsville, which will be on Saturday night. Dude, I think, what is it? The Dude Wipes. Dude 250. Wipes. I mean, they're good. Dude Wipes. 39 for 38. So one vehicle will go home. Let's see. Yeah, Cram there. Garrett Smithley in the 6. And Taylor Gray driving again in the 19 this weekend. So he'll be doing double duty. Eric Almirillo in the 20, which is interesting since John Hunter is at the racetrack. So Corey Heim in the 26. You're gonna see Perkins. 32 has been withdrawn. Akinori Ogata trying to make the show with Joey Gase. His team, Matt DiBurrito, racing again this weekend, number 38. He finished in the top 20 last Saturday. We got Joey Gase will be racing in number 53. Ryan Vargas will be racing the 74 for Mike Harmon. Carson Quapel making his Xfinity debut for Junior Motorsports in the 88. Nobody's listed in the 92 or the 07 as of now. I kind of have a feeling that they may withdraw that 92 car, depending on the points situation. And then 07, I forget who usually is driving it, but that is that. Josh, you get first dibs here. Who do you look at to get the victory and wild card for the Xfinity Series?
Yeah, I'll go with Justin Allgaier here. Good driver here at Martinsville. He's run well here in the past. Came up short. Well, actually, no, he won last year at Martinsville. So in the fall. So see if he can come back and pull another one in the spring here at Martinsville. And then wild card. I'll go with Corey Heim running in for Sam Hunt Racing. He ran pretty well, you know, this past weekend at Richmond in that 26 car. So, you know, as a non-points guy, can he back that up here with another good run in the state of Virginia?
Yeah, Corey Heim has been showing pace in that Sam Hunt 26. They've been making steps forward this last year or so. Not having to commit to one driver, I think, has made a little bit of a difference. But then, theoretically, when you're committing to a driver that's got the talent of Corey Heim, you know, compared to, like, Kaz Grala, no offense to you, to Kaz Grala, but we kind of know where Kaz Grala is in his career. So it's something. I think he does have a good shot to have a good night there. For me, I am going to go, Cole Custer. I'll go with Cole Custer for the victory, on Saturday night. He needed to drive this car backwards, I think, last November to, or last October, wherever, to get himself into the final four, after all the argy-bargy that went on between Austin Hill and Sheldon Creed, and they destroyed half the field. And I think Creed, or what do you call, Custer had to basically back up to get into the back up to cross the line to make it in. But I think this week he'll actually go and get the victory. He's had good success at Martinsville in the past. I feel like he won a truck race for Junior there, or ran well there for Junior in a truck. And he's pretty decent there. And then my wild card pick, I wanted to go Carson Quapel, but it's his debut. I'm going to go with Taylor Gray. So kind of hedging in a similar way like Josh, with a non-regular, a truck series driver, driving a Toyota. So I think that's my choice there. So the win and Taylor Gray as the wild card. All right, so last but not least is the Cookout 400, which will be on Sunday afternoon. 37 for 40, so no problems with qualifying. Worldwide Express for Chastain. Gumby Sindrick will have Menards and Libman Brooms, or Mops, or whatever. Bald Spot Dylan Bass Pro, Josh Berry with Mobile 150th Anniversary. Kind of curious what they're going to bring to the table there. It says it here, Kyle Larson, HendrickCars.com, Ruby. So we'll see what that's basically the Hendrick Car scheme, except with red, the Ruby Red. Bodyguard for Brad Keselowski, Gainbridge for LaJoy, Lucas Oil for Kyle Busch. UniFirst Uniforms for William Clyde Elliott II, Overstock.com for Gagson, Sport Clips on Dennis Hamlin's car, Advance on Ryan Blaney, trying to harken back to Rusty Wallace and the Miller Genuine Draft days with that car, Mahindra for Chase Briscoe, and 29 Capital Partners for Kaz Gralla, Alloy Employers Services for Josh Williams, Build Submarines for Christopher Buescher, Bass Pro also for Martin Truex Jr., Yahoo for Christopher Bell, Motocraft Quick Lane for Harrison Burton, Shell Penzo of Logano, McDonald's for Bubba Wallace, Exalta Byron, nobody listed for Daniel Hemric, Long John Silvers for Michael McDowell, Carson Newman University for Todd Gilliland, Haas Tooling for Ryan Preece. He qualified on pole for this race last year and led the first, I don't know, 30 or 40 laps or something, or won a stage, or I forget what, like, I think he won a stage and then went on pit road and then had a penalty, and then had to fight back the rest of the day just to get back up towards the front. John Hunter Nemechek with Skip Barber Racing School, Eric Jones Family Dollar, Money Lion for Tyler Reddick, Sonny D for Richard, instead of it being on the four car, Ally for Bowman, of course, Ohanify for Justin Haley, Monster Energy for Keebler Gibbs. I would assume that it's going to be Timmy Hill in the 66 for Carl Long, Zane Smith with Focused Health, Delaware Life for Hosovar, and Freeway Insurance for Daniel Suarez. All right, so my pick for this weekend at Martinsville, I think I was foreshadowing it. I'm going to go with MTJ because he's so mad he's going to take it out on someone or something. So MTJ to win, and my wild card, which is a good, that's another thing, like you'll have the 36 guys that have run all season, but actually 35 drivers that have run every race this season out of 48. And that means the top 18. Oh, that works. I'll just pick Joey Logano because that's probably going to be the last time I'm going to be able to do that as a wild card. So I'm going to pick Joey Logano. Joey Logano as a wild card because he's 19th in points. So that's going to be the last time I'm going to be able to do that. So I figure, why not? All right, Josh, you get the last call here. Kyle Larson was the defending race winner. First win at Martinsville last year when he got it. It's a Hendrick track. I mean, if there's not such thing as a Hendrick track, really, it's the 40th anniversary. So I guess it's leading towards a possibility of that. But I would also say that you can't go wrong taking a Toyota either. So what are you picking? Are you picking either of those, or are you going to go somewhere else?
I mean, it's a good pick there. I'm, you know, for Toyota, I mean, you have Hamlin that could easily win, Truex easily win. I mean, Ty Gibbs ran well there last year, different points in those races. And then Chris Bell was also a good pick, of course, ran, won that one back in 2022 there. But yeah, I think I'm just going to go with Kyle Larson again this week, especially with that 40th anniversary of Hendrick Motorsports, number 5, the original Hendrick ride there. So yeah, can't go wrong with Young Money. Him, as Kevin Harvick said, and as the young kids say these days, there.
Yeah, and then, the code word from his podcast, since they have one every week.
Yeah, yeah, and looking forward to the next code word there, which a lot of that's actually in my vernacular these days, at least, but keeping up with what people are saying these days. But my wild card this week, Josh Berry, former Xfinity winner here at Martinsville, of course, and he's actually, you know, with the short tracks the last couple of weeks, Bristol being one of them, and Richmond has ran pretty well. So I'm gonna go Josh Berry here, hopefully having a good run, a top 15, maybe top 10 run here at probably his best racetrack, you know, as a driver here in the Cup Series.
Yeah, definitely. This is the heart of where Josh Berry comes from. He's won the 300 there in the late models as well for Dale Jr. I feel like that was a case. I might be wrong, but you know, memory seems to go these days. But I definitely remember him winning, like Josh mentioned, winning that Xfinity race, which basically was a was the catapult that has him now in the four car driving what was Kevin Harvick's car for Tony Stewart. So, yeah, solid picks there. And I mean, him and Rodney Childers are starting to really figure each other out. I think what Josh needs, I think Childers is getting there. He knows that the cars are not that good. They're basically, right now, Stewart Haas Racing is an 11th to 20th place team. So if they're doing anything in that realm, then that's good. If they do anything better than that, it's a victory in a sense. So they were really fast at Martinsville both races last year. Briscoe was able to have good runs. I mentioned Priest getting the pole. So, I mean, and then Almirola always seemed to do pretty decent when he was there with the 10 car. So, I mean, there's a lot of potential there. So we'll see what happens with that. Going veteran heavy on my side, but two guys that have won a lot of races at Martinsville. So we'll see how it all works out. Okay, Josh, it's your time. Let us know what's going on in the world of iRacing.
Yeah, of course. iRacing, of course, you know, quick mention with the rain racing, of course. Yeah, hopefully NASCAR, hopefully iRacing and NASCAR work out something for potential, you know, depending on the weather, oval, wet weather racing and the short tracks, of course, which I think it would work. I've seen a couple of videos online of them trying, like in the 87s, trying wet weather racing, and that turned into a media disaster at Talladega. This is a custom race, by the way, not a official one, but you know, officially hosted races on iRacing. Hopefully they get the rain tires sorted out for the stock cars and all that on short tracks. That'd be definitely a lot of fun. And you know, the strategy and all that stuff, and I feel like, yeah, outside line would be the way to go, just like it was looking like in the real race for sure. But that would be definitely something to try out there, of course. But the, I guess, news here in iRacing, I mean, yeah, there hasn't really been too many news, of course, since the rain update, of course, but that's been, you know, been the talk of the community as of late there. But, you know, as far as my own results, you know, ran a couple times in the 87s at Auto Club Speedway. Definitely probably could have ran well in one of those, finished 20th, got into the wall late and couldn't continue. So that was one. And then the other one that I ran, the 87s, finished 6th at Auto Club there. Ran GR86 at Winton Motor Speedway road course in Australia. Ran 8th there. Got on podium at Okayama Circuit at MX5 Cup. So that was good on there. That was basically did on iRacing this past week. Doing all that mostly on Thursday, of course. But was hoping to be able to get a win in the Auto Club race for the 87s. Thought maybe I would have the tire advantage there, but tried to block a guy on the backstretch, I think, and then that didn't work out. So learned my lesson there, of course, but I was trying to protect my position and stay in front with a handful of laps to go and trying to take advantage of my tires there. So that was that. But this week, of course, on iRacing, on the official hosted races, Martinsville week. So definitely going to be hitting that one up, Martinsville, in all three series, Cup, Xfinity, Trucks. So definitely looking forward to doing a couple of races on iRacing there. Got the Formula Ford's Brands Hatch circuit on the Grand Prix circuit. Been playing that one, of course, on the rain. But let's see here, Formula Ford's. Oh, there's going to be scattered showers. So the Formula Ford's 67% chance of rain, so 100% humidity. So that's going to be fun. Looks like that could be fun there. Of course, the Indy cars racing at Auto Club as well. So that should be a lot of fun there to run, as you know, as I always like to run there in the any club series. So definitely for the Oval Series, fixed Oval Series, should be fun running at Auto Club Speedway. See the time of day for that one, realistic at 2:00, so definitely gonna be a daytime race there and everything. See NASCAR at Martinsville, the 87s at Charlotte Motor Speedway there. Got the MX5 Cup at Snetterton Circuit there, so that might be fun. Draftmasters at iRacing Super Speedway once again. Got the Ferrari Challenge at Motorsport Arena Oschler Spin Grand Prix Circuit. That might be interesting. Formula V's at Okayama International Circuit. Their rookie Formula Ford's at Okayama International Circuit as well. So, yeah, definitely a lot of. Oh, and Gen 4 Cup at Nashville Super Speedway. So, yeah, definitely a lot of, with the iRacing course, a lot of opportunity this week across everything to get good runs in. So looking forward to maybe getting a few at Martinsville here this week or so, and maybe a couple of IndyCar at Auto Club for sure. So yeah, lots of opportunity there. Maybe I'll stream one of these races at Auto Club for sure, in the IndyCar or in Martinsville in the Cup Series. So definitely looking forward to attempting one of those and possibly going for a good finish there. Hopefully don't get run over at the short tracks, which that's always the risk running the short tracks. I think in the Xfinity car, I think I'll be okay. The Cup car, you gotta be really aggressive there. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, of course, always glad to be back, for another week and everything. And of course, you can follow my streams, which I think I might try to stream this week, twitch.tv/YourSailor2, and go on there and look at the streams on there. Of course, my Twitter page, you know, talking about, you know, all the stuff that we see in NASCAR this week. Twitter at JP Huffine, or X at JP Huffine, whatever you want to call it. And of course, our YouTube page, YouTube Gripshire Podcast, we'll have this up and you can watch it on there. Should be interesting. You know, got the men's final four as well next week. In a pool, I'm still alive. I've got UConn and Purdue as my final championship game bracket. And I think if UConn wins, win a good amount of money in the pool. So that should be fun. And so that's what I'll be also rooting for. So might be tweeting about that. And I think the championship is on Monday, so next week. So possible live casting of that. Because there'll be money on the line if UConn wins on Saturday, but in the Final Four. So definitely be talking about that on Twitter for sure as well. So yeah, of course, like I said, yeah, glad to be back on for another week to talk about, you know, everything we saw this week in racing.
Absolutely. Wouldn't want to do it with anyone else, man. We have fun doing this deal, and I have fun doing this. It's a combination of shooting the breeze, going and bench racing and shooting the shit and saying crazy stuff since I can do it, since it's our deal. And, of course, providing information, being proper journalists here on the Gripshire Podcast, tongue-in-cheek saying that these days, but also, you know, the way journalism's gone these days. But you can find me at PGMatthew28. My picks in the pool for what is it, Johnny on the track or whatever pool I'm trying to see here. I lead the points. Yeah, Johnny on the track, Twitter Fantasy League. I'm the points leader after I nailed consecutive winners early in the season with Daniel Suarez at Atlanta and Kyle Larson at Vegas, which really wasn't a stretch. And then I think at Daytona, I'm forgetting who I had there, but I can bring it up right here. I have it written down. So I didn't pick Byron, I know that, but I picked Bowman. Yeah, that's what it was. So I had picked the second, first, the first three races. Then I had Will Byron at Phoenix. That went to hell. Christopher Bell at Bristol. Could have went better than what it did. Chastain at Coda. And then yesterday, I picked Denny Hamlin. So that's three winners so far. Continue to maintain the points lead. You can find that. I don't post it out there, but it's there, PGMatthew28. You can find us at Gripshire Pod on Twitter. You can find the Gripshire Podcast basically anywhere you listen to podcasts, especially on Apple and on Podbean, where is our host site. And then, as Josh mentioned, the YouTube page. You can find the audio also on my YouTube, personal YouTube page, but then philipgmatthew.com, philipgmatthew28.podbean.com. Both of those are ways you can go and listen to the Gripshire Podcast. So we'll have this episode out and also last one, get them all out there, and we'll see next week. We'll talk about NASCAR at Martinsville. We'll also talk about Japanese Grand Prix for probably 10 seconds. We probably will have college basketball on, do a little live cast as long as Josh is still up with Connecticut, since Connecticut is pretty dominant. We'll talk all about that next week on episode 215. And oh yeah, it's actually a tradition unlike any other, since it'll be the pre-Masters episode, so we'll have to be extra snooty and arrogant, you know, like every member of Augusta National is, like that idiot stick Roger Goodell, who gets paid $30 million for being a shill, and he's a member at Augusta National. What a joke. But that's beside the point. We'll be back next week to even preview the Masters here, and we'll talk about everything else going on in the world of motorsports and sports here. So thanks, as always, for listening and supporting, and we'll see you next time.